Welcome to ACT for Missouri's Deep Dive Audio Edition. I'm going to walk you through H.J.R. 173, the constitutional amendment that passed the Missouri Senate in April 2026 and will appear on your ballot this November. This is a long one, so if you're driving or folding laundry, settle in. We've organized it into 13 short sections, and you can always come back to the written version on our website if you want to see the charts or read the source material. Here's what you need to know up front. H.J.R. 173 would do three things. First, it would phase out Missouri's individual income tax through a set of automatic triggers tied to state revenue growth. Second, it would remove a constitutional protection Missouri voters put in place in 2015, the one that blocks the legislature from expanding the sales tax to services. And third, for 5 years, it would exempt any sales tax expansion from Missouri's voter approval requirement under the Hancock Amendment. The official fiscal note estimates that when fully implemented, this would reduce state general revenue by about $8.5 billion per year, roughly 55% of the state's general revenue budget. The fiscal note also projects the income tax could be eliminated as early as tax year 2028. Which is 3 to 4 years faster than what Governor Kehoe and legislative leaders have publicly described. That's the big picture stakes. Now let's walk through what it actually means for Missouri families. Where Missouri actually starts. You'd think, listening to the political rhetoric, that Missouri is a high-tax state in desperate need of rescue. The data says otherwise. On the Tax Foundation's 2026 State Tax Competitiveness Index, a ranking produced by a fiscally conservative research organization, Missouri ranks 12th, up from 13th the previous year. On the corporate tax component, Missouri ranks 5th in the country. On unemployment insurance taxes, 5th. On property taxes, 11th. Missouri's cost of living, according to Merrick, ranks 6th lowest among all states. Missouri already eliminated capital gains taxation in 2025, the first state in the country to do so. The state's individual income tax top rate is 4.7%, and because it kicks in at just over $9,000 of income, it functions essentially as a flat tax. Where does Missouri rank poorly? Mostly on the sales tax component, where it sits at 25th. Missouri's combined state and average local sales tax rate is already 8.41%, one of the higher combined rates in the country. And that's before any expansion. Here's the uncomfortable implication. The one part of Missouri's tax code that's already dragging on its competitiveness is the part that H.J.R. 173 would expand.
Does the math work?
Supporters of the amendment often claim that after the swap, Missouri's state sales tax rate would stay under 6%. Let's check the arithmetic. Missouri's individual income tax generates about $8.5 billion annually. Missouri's 3% general revenue portion of the state sales tax on today's tax base generates about $3.09 billion. So each percentage point of sales tax produces roughly $1.03 billion. To replace $8.5 billion in income tax revenue using only today's sales tax base, you'd need to raise the state's general revenue sales tax rate from 3% all the way up to about 11.25%. That would push the total state rate to 12.5%, and the average combined state plus local rate to around 16.7%. In high local tax areas like parts of St. Louis and Kansas City, the combined rate could approach 19%. Now, proponents will say, yes, but we'll expand the base. We'll tax services, not just goods. That's true, and a moderate expansion, say, taxing haircuts, gyms, streaming services, and repair work, brings the average combined rate down to around 10.6%. With state rate roughly 6.4%. That's still higher than what's being promised. To actually keep the state rate near 6%, you'd need a broad expansion, taxing rent, medical services, prescription drugs, and professional services. That's scenario C. It's also politically unlikely, because every one of those categories comes with powerful opponents. And even that gets you to an average combined rate of about 9.2%.
One of the bill's own sponsors, Senator Curtis Trent of Springfield, has publicly acknowledged that combined rates above roughly 20% would risk the reform failing entirely, because Missouri shoppers would simply cross state lines for big-ticket purchases. He's right to worry about that. And it tells you something that the bill's sponsor is already thinking about where the ceiling might be.
Section 3. Who wins and who loses?
This is the part that deserves the clearest explanation, because a tax swap is, by definition, a redistribution, even when the total revenue stays the same. The Institute on Taxation and Economic Policy publishes an analysis called Who Pays? That looks at what share of their income each group of Missourians pays in state and local taxes. Here are the numbers. The lowest income 20% of Missouri households, those making under about $21,000 a year, currently pay 9.8% of their income in state and local taxes combined. The middle 20%, households making between roughly $43,000 and $75,000, pay about 8.6%. The top 1%, households making over $590,000 per year, pay about 5.7% of their income in state and local taxes.
Stop and absorb that for a moment. In Missouri today, the lowest income households pay a higher share of their income in state and local taxes than the wealthiest households. That's upside down regardless of your tax philosophy. Supporters of progressive taxation say the wealthy should pay a higher share. Supporters of flat taxation say everyone should pay roughly the same share. Under either standard, a 4-point gap against working families is not what fairness looks like.
Now, what does each tax contribute to those totals?
Sales and excise taxes take 5.3% of income from the lowest 20%, but only 0.9% from the top 1%. The income tax does the opposite. 0.5% from the lowest group, and 3.5% from the top 1%.
So here's the mechanical effect of the swap. Eliminating the progressive part of the tax code, the income tax, while expanding the regressive part, the sales tax on services, makes the existing upside-down structure worse, not better.
Now let's talk about seniors specifically. Missouri is already one of the most tax-friendly states for retirees. Social Security is exempt for anyone 62 or older. Military pensions are fully exempt. Other retirement income is partially exempt. Most Missouri retirees already pay very little state income tax. What they do pay, every day, is sales tax. On groceries, on car repairs, on medications, on home repairs, on health care. Eliminating a tax they already largely avoid, while expanding a tax they pay every day, is not tax relief for Missouri's retirees. It's a tax increase, dressed up as a tax cut. AARP testified at the Senate hearing on behalf of their 750,000 Missouri members. Their advocacy director, Jay Hardenbrook, put it this way, and I'll paraphrase. If you rely on Social Security or a public pension, this bill raises your taxes and cuts your services. That is precisely what this bill does.
Section 4. The Kansas Experiment.
Before we get into Tennessee, let's talk about Kansas. Because Missouri's western neighbor has already run essentially this experiment, and the results are in. In 2012 and 2013, under Governor Sam Brownback, Kansas dramatically cut income taxes and zeroed out pass-through business income. The goal was eventually to eliminate the income tax entirely. Grover Norquist and Americans for Tax Reform publicly praised Brownback's plan as a model and called the 2013 legislation genius. What happened? Kansas underperformed its neighboring states on economic output, on job creation, and on new business formation. Revenues collapsed. The state's bond rating was downgraded. Education funding was cut.
infrastructure spending was reduced. In 2017, a Republican-led Kansas legislature reversed the tax cuts over Brownback's veto. The Brookings Institution called it, quote, one of the cleanest experiments for measuring the effects of tax cuts on economic growth.
Here's the part worth noting. Even after the Kansas reversal, Grover Norquist went on national television, NBC's Meet the Press, and defended the cuts. He said Brownback had, quote, done the right thing for the economy. And Americans for Tax Reform is the same organization that's now been brought to Missouri to testify in support of HJR 173.
So when you hear people say, Missouri's plan is different from Kansas, pay attention to who is saying it. Because the political and ideological machinery pushing this legislation is the same machinery that championed Kansas, defended it while it was visibly failing, and has never publicly acknowledged that it didn't work.
There's a local version of the same pattern. Former Missouri Senator Andrew Koenig was a leading income tax elimination advocate 8 years ago. He testified then that significant cuts would produce strong growth. At the January 2026 hearing on HJR 173, Representative Steve Butts asked Koenig directly why the predicted growth hasn't materialized. Koenig's answer, in essence, was, the cuts weren't big enough, so we need to go bigger. That's not a track record. That's an explanation for why the track record doesn't match the promises.
What Missourians said at the hearing.
The Senate hearing on HJR 173 ran more than 2 hours and drew testimony from every side of Missouri politics. Here's what was striking. The opponents weren't progressives arguing against tax cuts. They were a cross-section of Missouri institutions. Pro-business groups, senior advocates, school boards, chambers of commerce, saying the same thing in different words.
We're not opposed to eliminating the income tax. We're opposed to this particular plan, as written.
Let me give you a few specific voices.
Lisa Panett testified on behalf of Armor Vine, a Missouri lobbying firm that represents citizens and takes no paid clients. She said this, and I want to quote her carefully. Are we for eliminating the income tax? 100%. Let's do it. Let's do it today. We actually voted for you guys to do that. You can reduce or eliminate our income taxes today. What you do need to go to the vote of the people for is an increase in an expansion of taxes, which, by the way, the people have rejected twice.
Her point is important. The legislature can reduce or eliminate the income tax anytime it chooses. It doesn't need a constitutional amendment to do that. What it does need voter permission for is expanding the sales tax to services. Missouri voters have already rejected that twice on the ballot. Linking the two into a single ballot question, in her words, is a deceptive way to get taxes on services.
Ray McCarty, president of Associated Industries of Missouri, one of the state's oldest pro-business associations, testified against the bill as written. He challenged the claim that Missouri is losing to no-income tax states. In his data, Missouri has the lowest cost of living of any no-income tax state. Missouri's 4% corporate tax rate is the lowest of any state with a corporate income tax. And between 2024 and 2025, Missouri gained 10,612 businesses, while Tennessee lost 9,660, and Florida lost 18,792. Read those numbers again if you need to. Missouri is not losing. Missouri is winning on the business attraction metric proponents keep pointing to.
Quentin Wilson, the former Missouri Director of Revenue and a former Deputy Director of Economic Development, made a different point. He said, over the last 25 years, Missouri has become the sixth lowest tax state in America. Over that same period, Missouri has been the sixth lowest growing state in America. 25 years ago, Missouri was the best managed state in the country. Today, according to one ranking, Missouri is 31st. His framing. Keep doing the same thing and expect a different result. That's the definition of insanity.
Jason Zamkis, lobbyist for the Missouri Association of Realtors, pointed out something critical.
In his 2026 State of the State address, Governor Kehoe said a sales tax on services should not apply to real estate, to healthcare, or to agriculture. Those exemptions? Not in the bill, not anywhere. Missouri voters are being asked to approve a constitutional framework that leaves all three sectors fully exposed, based on a verbal commitment with no legal weight. And perhaps the most striking pattern of all? Many of Missouri's most mainstream institutions, the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, the Greater Kansas City Chamber, the Missouri Municipal League, the Missouri School Boards Association, came to the hearing to testify for informational purposes only. They couldn't support or oppose the bill because they had repeatedly asked to be part of the planning discussions and were never brought in. They didn't know what would actually be taxed or at what rate. Shannon Cooper, speaking for the Greater Kansas City Chamber, put it bluntly. We've reached out. We've asked to be part of this discussion. We've asked to see plans, specifics, actual tax rates, and what services will be taxed. As of today, we still haven't seen those. Senator Lewis, a Democrat sitting on the committee, responded to that testimony by saying, and I'm paraphrasing, "It is mind-blowing to me that so many stakeholders haven't been brought to the conversation. Let's pause and get this right."
Section 6. What this means for Missouri schools.
School funding deserves its own discussion because Missouri's education finance system is unusual. Missouri ranks 7th in the nation for reliance on local property tax revenue to fund public schools. 47% of Missouri school funding comes from local property taxes. The state's share of school revenues is just 30%, the lowest of any state in America. Federal funding fills the rest. So here's the picture. Missouri's public schools are overwhelmingly funded by local property taxpayers, not by state government. Statewide, property tax revenue in 2024 was $10.4 billion. More than the state personal income tax generates. Missouri's constitution does set a floor. Article 9, Section 3B requires that no less than 25% of state revenue go to public schools. That sounds protective, but here's the catch. 25% of a shrinking number is less than 25% of a stable number. If HJR 173 cuts state general revenue by 55%, the constitutional education floor automatically shrinks with it.
There's another timing problem most Missourians don't know about. In 2025, Governor Kehoe issued Executive Order 25-14, creating the Missouri School Funding Modernization Task Force. The task force is redesigning Missouri's K-12 funding formula. Its final report is due December 1, 2026, approximately 1 month after voters will have already voted on HJR 173.
Let that sink in. Voters will be asked to approve a constitutional amendment that fundamentally restructures state revenue, and they'll vote on it before they know what the new education funding formula actually looks like.
And the governor's instruction to the task force is to recommend funding at a level consistent with the fiscal year 2025 budget, which, according to the Missouri Independent, is about $300 million below the budget currently in place. So the task force is being told to design a new formula within an envelope that's already smaller than current spending, before voters have even had their say on the revenue side. The bill does contain one explicit school protection. Section 26.32 says that when local tax rates are adjusted down to offset new sales tax revenue, schools are exempt from that reduction. So schools keep the new local revenue. That's a real protection, and the bill's sponsor rightly points it out.
But, and this is the critical but, that protection only covers the local portion of school funding. The state portion, which flows through the foundation formula and comes from general revenue, is not protected. If general revenue falls 55%, the state's contribution to Missouri schools is exposed.
Rural districts feel this first. Rural Missouri districts get a larger share of their funding from the state
because their local property tax base is smaller. The Missouri School Boards Association testified that rural districts, quote, will be forced to make really tough decisions, such as consolidation, layoffs, or holding back raises. The Missouri Rural Crisis Center warned this could mean school consolidations and larger class sizes in rural communities that have already lost population.
Section 7. Tennessee, the supposed model.
Missouri's proponents point to Tennessee constantly. Let me tell you what's actually happening in Tennessee right now.
Tennessee is running a year-to-date revenue shortfall of about $88.5 million. Business tax collections alone are running $855 million below projections. Moody's recently described Tennessee's economy as treading water.
Tennessee has the second highest combined sales tax rate in the nation at 9.61%, with a 4% tax on groceries, one of the highest grocery tax rates in the country. The poorest Tennessee households pay an effective state and local tax rate of 12.8%, while the wealthiest pay 3.8%. That's the third most regressive tax system in America. And in 2024, the Tennessee legislature passed a $1.5 billion franchise tax refund package. More than 58,000 businesses applied. About 60% of the refunds went to companies based outside Tennessee. Among the largest beneficiaries, Amazon, FedEx, Nissan, and, yes, Lee Company, owned by Governor Bill Lee's own family. This is the trajectory Missourians are being told to emulate.
Tennessee spent decades building the conditions that make a consumption tax economy viable. The Nashville-Memphis-Gatlinburg tourism economy, the Nissan and Volkswagen auto manufacturing clusters, a long head start as the only southeastern state without an income tax. Missouri would be entering the same market after Tennessee has already captured most of the advantages, and just as Tennessee is starting to show signs of fiscal strain.
The loopholes.
The bill's sponsors often say that any expansion of the sales tax to services must be, quote, offset in the same legislation by a reduction in the top rate of individual income tax that is, quote, substantially equal to the new revenue. That sounds airtight. It isn't.
Let me walk you through the loopholes.
Loophole 1. The bill requires the offset to be in the same legislation. It does not say at the same time or simultaneously. So the legislature could pass a single bill that starts taxing services on January 1, 2027, while the offsetting income tax reduction doesn't take effect until January 1, 2029. Both are in the same legislation. The state collects 2 years of new revenue before the offset begins.
Loophole 2.
Substantially equal is a legal term of art that generally means approximately, within some margin. Courts have upheld 85% equivalence as substantially equal in other contexts. So there's no automatic correction if revenue overshoots. The extra money just stays with the state.
Loophole 3.
The income tax trigger mechanism runs on its own, independent of the sales tax expansion. Section 4D reduces the income tax rate based purely on revenue growth, no sales tax expansion required. Meanwhile, the offset requirement only binds when the legislature expands sales tax, not when the income tax reduction happens. The two can be completely decoupled in practice.
Loophole 4. The stated dual purpose is reducing and eliminating the state individual income tax and reducing local tax rates. Once the state income tax is zero, a future legislature could still argue expansion is permitted for the purpose of reducing local tax rates. Since local earnings taxes in Kansas City and St. Louis were renewed in April 2026 with 75% voter support, they're not going away. This justification could be cited essentially forever.
Loophole 5. For 5 years, the bill exempts motor vehicle sales tax from the constitutional rules that direct it to highway funds. So motor vehicle sales tax can flow into general revenue during the transition period. That's a quiet but substantial revenue transfer away from Missouri's highway system. Most voters wouldn't recognize this as part of the tax swap at all.
Section 9, the Hancock Amendment Point. This next point deserves its own moment because it's the one that may matter most, and it's the one most likely to get lost in the noise. The Hancock Amendment, passed by Missouri voters in 1980, limits how much state government can raise taxes without voter approval. A 1996 edition, Section 18E, specifically requires voter approval for any single piece of legislation that raises taxes above about $100 million annually. H.J.R. 173 exempts the sales tax expansion from Section 18E for 5 years.
I want to say that more clearly. If H.J.R. 173 passes in November 2026, Missouri voters are approving the framework. They are not getting a separate vote on which specific services will be taxed or at what rate. Those decisions will be made by the legislature, behind closed doors, without voter approval, for 5 years. When supporters say, "This puts the decision in the hands of the people," what they mean is, the decision to authorize expansion is in the hands of the people. The decision about what actually gets taxed is not.
Section 10, the bigger picture. Two broader dynamics matter, and they're worth naming. First, the fiscal urgency being cited to justify H.J.R. 173 is partly manufactured by how Missouri used federal COVID money. During 2021 through 2024, Missouri used about $2.7 billion in ARPA funds to pay for things that would normally come out of general revenue. That made general revenue look healthy, with surpluses accumulating. Now that ARPA is depleting, those costs are returning to general revenue, making it look suddenly strained. State Auditor Scott Fitzpatrick confirmed this in a December 2025 analysis. The upward pressure on general revenue is partly due to the ARPA substitution unwinding, not underlying program growth. Second, Missouri has a pattern of shifting revenue into dedicated accounts that never flow through general revenue at all. Marijuana tax revenue, constitutionally earmarked. Proposition C, dedicated to K-12 education. Conservation and parks, constitutionally dedicated. Lottery and gaming, dedicated to education. As a result, income tax is just 32% of total state-generated funding. Most state money is already in protected buckets.
H.J.R. 173 continues this pattern. It exempts schools from the local tax adjustment, so schools capture new revenue outside general revenue. It diverts motor vehicle sales tax from highways to general revenue for 5 years. It adjusts the conservation and parks dedicated sales taxes. The effect, taken together, is that total state spending can remain roughly stable, while general revenue itself shrinks dramatically. That shrinkage makes income tax elimination look more affordable than it is. And it creates an ongoing argument for future sales tax expansion, because the legislature can credibly claim that general revenue still needs more, even when total state revenue is rising. The 2015 constitutional wall against taxing services, which voters put in place specifically to prevent this dynamic, is permanently removed.
Section 11, where Act for Missouri stands.
At Act for Missouri, we want to be direct about our position. We're a principled conservative grassroots organization. We are not pro-Republican or pro-Democrat. We are principle over party. And our chief concern is protecting Missouri's working, middle class, and most vulnerable families. On H.J.R. 173, our position can be stated plainly. Eliminating the state personal income tax by itself, through responsible spending cuts and real economic growth, would be a good thing for every Missourian. We're for that. Many of the opponents who testified against H.J.R. 173 said exactly the same thing. There is a path to zero income tax that requires no new tax expansion, no sales tax on services, and no deferred accountability loopholes. The legislature already has the authority to take that path. it has chosen not to.
What HJR 173 does instead is replace one tax with another.
That is not a conservative approach. True conservatism demands a serious conversation about the purpose and proper size of government, about what the state should do, what it should stop doing, and what it should fund accordingly. That conversation hasn't happened here.
There is also the matter of trust. Missouri state spending has grown from roughly $27 billion a decade ago to over $50 billion today. The legislature and the governor have not demonstrated the kind of sustained spending discipline that would justify handing them constitutional authority to expand the sales tax base. Before Missourians give their state government access to a new, broader, and potentially larger pool of revenue, that government should first demonstrate it can control the revenue it already has.
We support large cuts to state spending, but they must be responsible in what gets cut and when.
Cuts that fall heaviest on seniors, working families, and the most vulnerable, either directly through higher sales taxes on essentials or indirectly through service reductions, are not conservative cuts. They're just cuts.
A principled approach would name the functions of state government that should be reduced, bring voters into that conversation honestly, and leave the revenue structure alone until the spending side of the ledger is in order.
Whatever your view of progressive versus flat tax systems, a state where the lowest earners pay 9.8% of income in state and local taxes, while the top 1% pays 5.7%, is not balanced. Eliminating a tax that contributes mostly to the upper rates and expanding a tax that contributes mostly to the lower rates makes that imbalance worse, not better.
If you take nothing else from this conversation, take this. The legislature already has the authority to reduce or eliminate Missouri's income tax. They don't need HJR 173 to do that.
What they need HJR 173 for is the other thing: authorization to expand the sales tax to services without going back to the voters for approval of the specific services they choose to tax.
Missouri voters have said no to that twice on the ballot.
Before November 2026, find out what you currently pay in state income tax. For many retirees and working-class Missourians, the answer is very little. Then add up what you spend on services that could be newly taxed: car repairs, home repairs, healthcare, haircuts, streaming services, professional services. Ask yourself whether the swap helps you or hurts you.
Then look up your Missouri state senator and state representative. Tell them what you want. Use the legislator lookup tool at act4mo.org or at the top of the article page. And finally, if you found this useful, share it. Most Missourians will not spend 30 minutes walking through a constitutional amendment before they vote on it, but they'll listen to a neighbor who did.
Thank you for listening. This has been Act for Missouri. You can read the full article, see the data charts, watch the hearing testimony videos, and access our continuing coverage at act4mo.org.